Hi, my name is Bart, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I want to thank Bill and Brenda. They're going to do a service workshop for us for about an hour. But before we start, every year when we get the registrations, there's always at least one letter that I enjoy getting with the registrations. And this one was interesting. Dear sir, I look forward to attending this day retreat. It was 31 years ago that I struggled into the rooms on the 4th, 5th, or 6th of August. I am therefore considering this to be my special anniversary gift to myself. And with that, I want to bring up Wallace W. for his 31-year coin. Is he here? Oh, there he is. He's walking in now. Wallace, you got a coin. Okay, there's also two more anniversaries this weekend. Bill C. with 25 years. Yeah. Oh, it's good. And Michelle from the Whitestone Group, 2 years. Happy anniversary.
Good afternoon. My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Baldwin Group in Nassau County. And I also, among the other things that some of the other things I do in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm the currently seated delegate to the General Service Conference of the U.S. and Canada for the local general service area that we're in here, which is called Southeast New York. And Brenda?
Hi, everyone. My name is Brenda. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a member of the Right Place Group in Westbury, Nassau County. And I have a general service position, and that is chair of the National General Service Group of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Okay, thank you, Brenda. I was going to tell you I was Tom, but I figured that you wouldn't fall for that. This is a little interlude here in the course of the Fellowship of the Spirit weekend. I want to thank the committee for inviting us to come and do this. What I'm going to do is talk a little bit about service, AA's third legacy, and in the course of things, hopefully I'll be clear, but if not, I certainly invite you to raise your hand and ask questions, and we do have time within the hour that's allotted to us for some Q&A and for some discussion. And I think obviously that'll probably, you know, break things up a little bit and make the whole thing a little more interesting. Writing about service, AA's legacy of service, Bill Wilson, in what's called the AA Service Manual, suggests that our 12-step carrying the message is the basic service that the AA Fellowship gives. This is our principal aim and the main reason for our existence. Therefore, AA is more than a set of principles. It is a society of alcoholics in action. We must carry the message, else we ourselves can wither, and those who haven't been given the truth may die. Hence, an AA service is anything whatever that helps us to reach a fellow sufferer, ranging all the way from the 12th step itself to a 10-cent phone call. This is written a while ago. And a cup of coffee, which probably also costs less then, and to AA's General Service Office for National and International Action. The sum total of all these services is our third legacy of service. Services include meeting places, hospital cooperation, and intergroup offices. They mean pamphlets, books, and good publicity of almost every description. They call for committees, delegates, trustees, and conferences. And not to be forgotten, they need voluntary money contributions from within the fellowship. So that was written back in 1951 when AA was still young. In the early years of the fellowship, the first 15 years of the fellowship to be precise, the practical and the spiritual leadership was provided in the East by Bill Wilson and in the Midwest by Dr. Bob Smith. And when things came up, these two co-founders were available face-to-face to the membership. You could go to Bill's house in Brooklyn or up in Westchester later on, and you could speak to the man. You could say, this is happening in my group. What should we do? And members often did. You could go to Dr. Bob and say, this is going on. We're not sure which way to turn on this. And he would be available. A lot of the early stuff that went on in AA, obviously, you know, there was an element of divine intervention there, but there was also an element of trial and error. And we learned through the wisdom and the leadership of these two men in particular and of many of the other early members and, you know, through our struggles as a fellowship, you know, how to bring this thing off. Bill was obviously not naive about things and recognized that he and Bob were not always going to be available to us as a fellowship. Dr. Bob died late in 1950, and Bill Wilson died early in 1971. In the late 50s, the late 40s rather, they were thinking, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to try and put in place that will serve the needs of the fellowship going forward in the days when you and I are not here? And the thing that they came up with was, and at that time there was already an AA, so-called AA headquarters, and there was a certain amount of structure. There were people who were considered trustees and friends of the fellowship who were active in service to the fellowship. But to bring about something that really would provide a broad basis for participation, they came up with a thing called the General Service Conference and the General Service Structure. This was to designed expressly to kind of take the place of these early members and in particular the co-founders as the fellowship matured. And the conference was a concept, largely Bill's concept, but also supported by a number of others. And they structured it in the late 40s, and in 1951 the conference met for the first time. It was going to meet on a trial basis for 4 years, and then in the fifth year, 1955, we would take stock and see where we stood as a fellowship and whether this would be something that would be enduring or whether it was something that was seemed like a good idea at the time but isn't really going to work. Brenda's going to share with us a speech that Bill offered in 1954. The conference has met now for 4 years at that point. And this is some of Bill's reflection on where he thinks we stand at that point as AA is coming of age.
This piece is actually taken from an unpublished 1954 talk by Bill W., courtesy of and with permission from Alcoholics Anonymous World Services General Service Office Archives. So there was a long discussion in which I had a sad falling out with a good many of my friends, some of whom had been trustees, and it was quite a bitter and harrowing chapter in our affairs, which none of you know about. This struggle to see whether this movement will always be headed by a self-perpetuating hierarchy of old-timers, or whether these affairs, so vital to the welfare of AA all over the world, should be turned over to you. And finally, after 6 years of hassling about it, I finally got the consent of the Board of Trustees to come out to you and to say, here is a means which in experimental form we have put in a pamphlet marked the Third Legacy. Here is a means by which you can get some delegates and state committee men and send folks up to New York to take charge and to take over what is now your business. And so why don't you come up there and look this deal over, and the trustees will agree to make themselves responsible to you instead of to nobody. And you look it over and see what you think about it. And if at the end of 4 years you like the way that this temporarily laid out, then we'll drive a plug in this thing. Then we old timers up there, including yours truly, will say, look, folks, these vital services are yours to have and to hold. This conference of delegates shall hereafter be the custodians and the guardians of our traditions. This is yours. This is the remainder of your third legacy. Will you accept it? So since 1951, we have been holding these yearly conferences to see whether this movement was interested enough, was responsible enough, felt those services were worthwhile enough to maintain so long as God will need this society. And I think it's the conclusion of every delegate who has been there that, yes, we should take these things over. So in 1955, we purposed to hold an international convention, at which time, on behalf of the old-timers and of Smithy and me, we shall say to you, here is the remainder of your third legacy. The conference shall become our successor. To you we hand the last torch. Carry on. Face your destiny with surety and courage, and God love you.
Sounds a little different when you hear it in the voice of Bill Wilson, as I did at the conference, but we'll take the New Zealand accent anyway, if you didn't peg that. These are the words of Bill Wilson speaking to a group somewhere in the United States or Canada in 1954. He's looking back on 4 years of a trial of this experiment called the General Service Conference. And he's looking back with some satisfaction, but at the same time, some sadness. Nothing in AA came about without birthing pains, and Bill talks about having a falling out with some of his early friends over trying to push this idea forward. Bill was certainly a driver, and I guess, you know, he maybe drove over a few people along the way. But he's looking at it with some satisfaction. He thinks, so we have something that works. And the title of the book, AA Comes of Age, is of this period. The book talks about that 15-year period from 35 to 55, where the fellowship is really finding its legs. Many of the things that you and I take for granted today, including the 12 traditions and most, if not all, of our literature, comes into being, in essence, in this period. And to some extent, under the watchful eye of this young General Service Conference. What I'm here to really do is to kind of give you a little feel for what that conference is about, what it looks like. It is your conference. This is not something that happens over there. This is ours. This is mine. This is yours. This is something that has an intimate touch on the shape of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous as we have come to know it. And it is something that you can, it's something that you have a right to participate in. Perhaps you'll even see that you have an obligation to participate. I'll leave you to draw that conclusion for yourselves. But there is a way of this thing. I'm going to try and kind of explain a little bit of that today, and hopefully try and use some examples of things that have gone on or through the conference that might be of particular interest to this group. The conference met for its 56th year this year. It met for the first time in 1951. That was the year I was born. And there's an interesting piece in the service manual talking about why we need a conference, and it talks about the role of the conference in assuring that AA is there for the child born today, destined to alcoholism. I was that child, born the year that the conference first sat. So that has a special poignance for me. Some 55, almost 55 years later, for me to sit in that conference, to be in that hall, to listen to those words that Brenda read in Bill's own voice as he delivered them so many years ago. It was one of several moments during the conference week this year where, you know, I came close to tears, and I'm not the tearful sort exactly, for those who know me. It was very moving to hear this man to whom I owe so much, talking about this thing that I had been privileged to become a part of. But what I want to emphasize is not so much my part in that, but our part in that. I mentioned that I'm the delegate from the local general service area. The conference includes all AA in the United States and Canada, and there are similar conferences in most other countries where AA is also present, and they are autonomous of this conference, but modeled on the conference here in the U.S. and Canada. The conference has currently 93 what are called delegate areas. This local delegate area, which I have represented for 2 years now, is called Area 49. They're given numbers, and they also have names. We're called Southeastern New York, or CINI for short, because we like our acronyms. Each of those areas is entitled to select a representative to come to New York for what is essentially a week-long business meeting. Now, I don't know how many of you here look forward to perhaps sitting in on a week-long business meeting. I know in my home group, we had a rule until a year or so ago where the business meeting would not run more than 20 minutes. And to some, that seemed excessive. So to think about sitting in a meeting that is going to run from, you know, you get up early in the morning, it starts out with an early bird AA meeting, and then you're in session by 9 o'clock, and you know, you're going to be in session until 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Naturally, we had coffee breaks and broke for meals. They fed us very nicely, thank you. But, you know, it's a very busy week, a very demanding week. So each of these 93 areas elects a representative, sends them to this business meeting, and what happens at this business meeting. Most of you are probably familiar with some of our service committees, things like public information, cooperation with the professional community, literature, grapevine, correctional facilities, treatment facilities, and so on. There are 13 of these committees represented at the conference. Ideas and concerns that come from you, the membership, are sent to the General Service Office, usually through the local General Service area. And through a process of sort of filtering, they end up on an agenda for one of these 13 committees. We heard Tom talk earlier about participating as a General Service Rep in his local area, with trying to push the idea that we should get the doctor's opinion back on page Arabic 1 in the big book, where it is not now. It was in the first edition, but it is no longer now. It's floating in the Roman numerals. That's an example of an idea out there in the fellowship. That one particular one didn't make it to the conference because apparently it didn't make it out of the local area. But there are many ideas out there that members talk about, discuss, debate, push for, and some of them do make it to the General Service Office, and some of those do make it onto agenda. That's a process which I describe as filtering, I guess, and I'll come back to that in a little bit. Each year, the conference has an agenda of items. As I've said, many of them came from you, the members, one way or another. And this year at the conference, I think there was some almost 60 different items that these 13 committees considered. The committees look at these agenda items over the course of the week that they meet, and will make recommendations then to the full body on these agenda items. Some things the committees will say, well, you know, that's interesting, but, you know, maybe not this year. And I'll share with you some examples of that. Others, they will say, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's offer it to the full group. Literature this year, for instance, considered a second AA history book. That was an idea that came from within the fellowship. And made it onto the literature agenda. The literature committee looked at that and did not think that that was something that we needed at this time. and said, thank you, but no, we're not going to recommend that to the full body. So that didn't really go anywhere. There were other ideas, such as a pamphlet, on AA, religion and spirituality. An idea for a pamphlet like that has been out there in the fellowship for a number of years. That also then went to the literature committee, but yet again, this was an idea that they didn't think was necessary at this time, so they didn't pass that through. They did pass through a couple of other things. They discontinued the pamphlet Letter to a Woman Alcoholic, for instance. That was an interesting discussion on the floor. There were men and women who got up and said, this is a vital pamphlet. How can we trash this? This is what I got sober on. This is what helped me come into AA. This was my entry point to the fellowship. And others who got up and said, this thing is so archaic. It is so insulting to modern women that how can we possibly publish it? And that range of opinion got played out on the conference floor by your representatives. And in the end, the conference did decide that that pamphlet would be discontinued. So those are just a couple of examples of some things that were out there. By the end of the conference week, a number of these decisions had been made and a lot of ideas had been set aside. And what you'll see at the end of the conference is a very detailed conference report. It comes out in a very, very preliminary form in what's called Box 459. For those of you who have been involved with General Service, this is a periodical that the General Service Office puts out from roughly every other month, six times a year, I think. And it summarized some of the activities of the conference. The final report, this is last year's final report, is due out like any moment now. Like when I get home, they might be sitting on my doorstep. Awaiting distribution. This gives you a very detailed statement of what went down at the conference. One of the things I think that's important in here also is that it gives you a very detailed finance report. AA is always looking for money, right, at various levels. Well, you ever wonder where the money actually goes? Well, in terms of the money that goes to the so-called headquarters, the General Service Office, they tell you exactly where the money goes in here. And I think it's useful to look at some of that to know where the money is going. So that's pretty much that conference week. The week is kind of punctuated with other things going on, but basically, you know, it's a big business meeting. The parallel process that kind of takes place in support of the conference is a trustees process. You heard Bill and his piece about getting the conference going talking about the trustees. And you also heard him talk about that in the little piece I read, talk about trustees in the piece I read out of the service manual. In tandem with these service committees at conference are trustees-level service committees. And this is where the filtering that I mentioned takes place. The best way to get the conference to look at something that you think is important is to get it to come through your local general service area. Tom wasn't able to do that with the doctor's opinion, but many other things do come through the local general service area. And what that says to the General Service Office is that there's not just a member out there who thinks this or a group out there that thinks this, but there's a whole area that supports this idea, maybe not unanimously, but substantially, and we should look at that. The trustees receive a whole bunch of these things, and what they do is then they kind of go through them and make some decisions on our behalf as to which should be then passed on to the conference for the conference's consideration. Some things have been to the trustees repeatedly and not made it to the conference. Some things have been to the trustees repeatedly, made it to the conference, and never made it out of the conference. It's an interesting process to watch. It is a very thoughtful process. It is a very slow process. But it's a process that really is designed that when something finally comes out of it, it has broad consensus, broad support throughout the conference that is looking at it. those 93 delegate areas have to agree, with two-thirds of the conference saying yes, that we're going to do this particular thing that's been recommended. Some things that might be of interest to this group that made it as far as perhaps the trustees but not to the conference. More than once there has been this a request that we retire living sober. There's a number of members out there in the fellowship that for some reason suggest that living sober is not consistent with our big book. Imagine that. How could we have published something like that? This idea has been out there for a while. It is obviously something that has not made its way through this process. If obviously there's some of you who share that idea. If you do, and if you would like to see the retirement of living sober, you got to work through your local general service area to build a local consensus that says, in this case, Southeast New York supports the idea of retiring living sober because. And then that gets passed on to the conference. If enough areas suggest that, that ends up on the agenda and it gets serious consideration and it becomes a real possibility. Something else that was suggested but didn't make it its way to the conference this year was the idea of possibly having the fellowship publish a big book dictionary. I see in the items for sale that there's a big book dictionary out of there. Well, the idea that was floated this year, and I believe it's come up before, is that perhaps we as a fellowship should do that, that maybe that would be a useful tool. That idea did not make its way through, but you know, it's out there in the firmament, and it has the possibility of having serious consideration before the conference. If you, the membership, tell the conference through your representatives that that's something that you would like to see. The big book itself is preserved in the form that you see it because of the action of the conference. The conference, while there are some differences between first, second, third, and fourth editions of the big book, they are more on the order of page numbering rather than actual changes to the text. When the fourth edition of the big book was approved in, I think it was 2000, what's called the publications department at AA World Service thought it was a nice idea to maybe clean up some of the punctuation. People who, you know, look closely at the big book noticed that it wasn't the same in the fourth edition now. That first 164 pages, in fact, had been changed, even though we said we would not change it, and there's a problem with that. Well, in the conference of, I think it was 2004, that had made its way through this process, and it came back to the Literature Committee. The Literature Committee did not think that the changes in punctuation needed to be addressed. And they did not recommend that to the conference, as I recall. I wasn't at that conference, so I'm kind of giving you a secondhand view of this. On the floor of the conference, however, delegates from various areas felt strongly enough that when we said we're not going to change the big book, that means we're not going to change the big book. It doesn't mean we're not going to change it, but it means we're not going to change it. And that discussion and argument played out on the floor of the conference. And in subsequent printings of the fourth edition of the big book, you'll find that the punctuation has been restored to the original. So these are some things that play out through this thing called the conference. I guess the thing that I'm here to really encourage as much as possible is that you recognize that this is your conference and your process, that as such, you have a right to participate. And that there are definitely ways that you can do that. You can't show up at the conference and say, I'd like to be heard. It doesn't quite work that way. That would be obviously chaotic. But you certainly do have the opportunity to, through your general service representatives, through your district's structure, through your county and area service structures, bring ideas forward. If those ideas kind of make their way through, they become part of the fabric of AA as we know it going forward. So those are just a couple of things I think are of some interest and of some value. There's no questions or comments so far, right? Or are there? Okay, then I'll rattle on. I want to speak personally for a few minutes. Why bother with all this stuff? Now, this is politics, isn't it? Why should I get involved in this? One thing that I found that in my AA experience is that along the way, opportunities have presented themselves to me to further my recovery. You heard, I forget whether it was last night or earlier today, any jerk can be sober in a vacuum. Anyone can practice these principles well when we don't actually have to interact with other people. It's when I actually have to go out there and deal with my fellow human being that's kind of the test of whether or not I've been wasting my time and wasting my sponsor's time on some of this stuff. One of the things that I've experienced in service is that whether it was as coffee maker or as group secretary or as an intergroup representative or as a county officer in general service or as a public information committee chair or as a treasurer or as an area chair or now as delegate, these service experiences have really offered me kind of a workshop, a workshop in a safe place where I can kind of test Bill's capacity with those 12 steps to see whether, in fact, I'm growing, whether I'm in fact recovering or whether I'm just the same jerk who walked in here a few years ago. Sometimes the answer is that I'm the jerk, and sometimes the answer is that I am in fact growing. But you've given me a place to try that, to practice these principles so that I can kind of be a better person, a more adequate person, a more whole human being when I get out there with my family and on the job and in my neighborhood. I mean, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a guy who had all sorts of education, but I didn't know a damn thing about living well. I knew nothing about getting along with my fellow human being. My idea of settling an argument might be to throw a chair. I mean, it could be very decisive, but, that kind of wears thin after a while. And in here, you taught me that there were other ways that I could tolerate someone not sharing my opinion. My God, you don't think as I do? What's that about? And it was through these service experiences that I started to learn small lessons that, kind of started to collect and became a new way of life, ultimately. I remember when I was first learning to make coffee, which was my first service job in AA, and I took great pride in my coffee setup, and I was very naturally compulsive about it. And, I had to set the cookies out a certain way, and the napkins had to be over here, and I needed a little bowl for the empty sugar packets to be thrown in and the stirrers. And I would, you never notice how, like, the coffee pot is always too low to get the cup under the spout? Have you ever noticed that? So, you know, I would take a baking tin and I'd turn it upside down and I'd put the coffee pot up there. And I was very proud of my 100-cup pot of coffee and my coffee, my cookie set up and all that. And what would happen? The first drunk would walk in and throw the sugar over there and spill the coffee over here and knock the cookies on the floor, you know. But I was learning something in learning to tolerate that, you know, I had shown up. It was my responsibility to show up and make you coffee tonight. I did that. I did it with some care and some thought. And that was my offering. And then I would step back and let that go. And it was like little lessons like that along the way. Every service position I have taken had presented me with those kinds of opportunities to learn and to grow and to, as we say, to practice these principles. And right through sitting at conference, I mean, you know, I like to think of myself as a sober-minded person at this point. You saw me get a 25-year coin a few minutes ago, so hopefully I've got something to show for that. And I was just sharing with a friend how I was sitting in a meeting and I was screaming at our area chairperson, you know, over some stupid thing just a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, where's that at? Well, you know, it's an opportunity to go practice that 10th step and to, you know, kind of take a look at why, you know, I was so irritated that I had to yell and so on, and to just set that right. And to find another way of working out whatever my issues were with this person, a better way. So, you know, the opportunities present, and I just have to have the willingness to grow through them. And that's part of what you've given me. This current thing with being a delegate, I'm the, I guess I'm the 56th. No, that's not right. It's a two-year term, so I'm the 23rd, do the math, 28th. I'm the 28th delegate from my area. One of 28 out of hundreds of thousands of members who have come through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why is that? I mean, it's not because I'm especially worthy, I assure you of that. But, you know, somehow Providence brought me here and allowed me this. I am immensely appreciative to those of you who have, you know, participated in allowing me to have that experience. The payback has been immense. Even just to be able to sit there and listen to Bill Wilson. I'm one of, like, you know, maybe 200 people who have heard that out of a fellowship of 2 million. That's rare. You know, you'll all have access to the text of that if you're interested. It'll be in the conference report. It's also in my area report, so it's on our website. For those of you who are interested or intrigued or PO'd with anything I've shared, we do have some of our area newsletters. We put out a 10 times a year newsletter. And it has phone numbers and email addresses for various people who are serving with the local area committee and assembly. As I say, I do represent many of the people in this room, or have represented many of the people in this room at that thing called the General Service Conference. It's been a remarkable, remarkable kind of thing for me personally. And one of the other nice things about it is that I have met some truly fantastic people. UAAs are really special. When you think about where we came from to where we are, we really clean up pretty nice. And I've met some really interesting and wonderful people. Not that I always agreed with everyone I met. But there was always a collegiality, a respect, a courtesy that has been shown. part of this whole service structure thing also involves, I mentioned trustees. We have two kinds of trustees that serve Alcoholics Anonymous. Trustees who are from among the membership of the Fellowship of AA, they're recovered alcoholics, and those are referred to as Class B trustees. And then there are Class A trustees. These are the friends of AA, people like, you know, in the old days it would be Dr. Silkworth and Harry Tybo and some of the early friends, Bernard Smith and so on. Some of those names hopefully ring a bell. We have them with us today. There are only seven of them, but they too are a remarkable group of men and women. They're drawn from a variety of backgrounds. Some come out of the faith community. Currently, Ward Ewing, an Episcopal priest, is a Class A trustee, and he's currently chairing the Public Information Committee for the trustees. We have Alan Ault, who's coming out of corrections, and he's going to be rotating out next year, but he's prominent in that community, and he serves Alcoholics Anonymous. There have been always the friends of AA from the very beginning. It was the friends of AA, even before there was an AA, that made it possible for Bill to meet Bob. And I'll try and draw this to a close. One of the nice experiences that I had coming out of this conference, after all was said and done, and we're ready to say our goodbyes, kind of, because we went up to Stepping Stones, which most of you know is the Bedford Hills, Westchester home where Bill and Lois lived in their later years. And they loaded us all up on a bus, and we went up there. And it's an interesting place. If you haven't been, I would certainly recommend you get up there, because there's new management afoot at Bedford Hills, and it may be moving more in the direction of being more of a museum than the way it is right now. Right now, you can kind of walk around the house at liberty, and you can't lay down on Bill's bed or anything like that. But that'd be a bit much, perhaps. But I got to sit at the kitchen table, which had been in the house on Clinton Street in Brooklyn, and that was the table that Bill sat at when Ebby came to him with the word that there might be a way out through the practice of spiritual principles. Sat at the same table that Bill sat at when Ebby came to him. That was strong for me. There's a little side building up there called Wits Ends, and that's where Bill did a lot of his writing. I'm told it's called Wits Ends because that was where Lois would send Bill when she was at her wits ends with him. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but that's what I hear. In that little building, I got to sit at the desk that Bill sat at when he wrote the 12 and 12, when he wrote those Grapevine articles that many of us are familiar with and love. I saw the cigarette burns on the desk where, you know, he would put down his cigarette and there's a scorch mark. You know, it was a rare opportunity that's as close to Bill Wilson as I'm going to get. You can do that. You don't have to be part of this general service thing to do that. But I had never been. You know, I live in New York. I've never been to the Statue of Liberty. It's that kind of thing. But because, you know, you threw me into this general service conference thing, or allowed me into this general service conference thing, I ended up going up to Stepping Stones and getting about as close to Bill Wilson as I'm ever going to get. It's been a rare experience, and I hope that you will give some thought, perhaps, to whether your group is connected to the rest of the fellowship, because that's what this structure is all about. It's about connecting my home group with your home group, you know, with the home group in Alberta and the home group in Saskatoon and the home group in Dallas and so on, so that we have a unity as a fellowship, that we have that spiritual connection to each other as much as is possible with a fellowship with, I think we have something like 58,000 groups in the U.S. and Canada, give or take a few, and like 1.2 million members. I guess also for this group in particular, because you are as interested in our basic text as you are, and that you look at it as closely as you do, I think it's important that that spirit be kept and be reinforced in what some of these other structures say and do. As much as possible, it would be nice to feel that, in fact, the conference does reflect the conscience of AA. But that's only true to the extent that you make it true through participation. So does your group have a GSR? Tom was a GSR. He mentioned that. I was a GSR. There's probably others here who have been. A lot of groups don't have active GSRs. Here in New York, we have some maybe 2,000 groups or meetings. We have about 800 of those actively connected to the service system. That's less than half. That's not so great. So there's room for growth there. So if you take anything from this, you know, it's possibly the idea that, you know, something this guy said, you know, either made me want to go out there and make sure they don't do it, or showed me that it is possible that I can encourage them to do it. And that the way to do that is through participation. So we have about 10, 12 minutes by that clock. There is time for some comments or questions. There is a microphone somewhere that will go around. And if you just wait for the mic, right over here in the front. Ken? I also have to say I recognize a lot of you from around the area, and that's kind of nice, too.
My name is Ken. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ken.
Sobriety first. First, I want to thank you for your service. You were the first delegate I saw elected when I was not a GSR, so I sat on the side and was impressed by the spirituality in the first CNE election that I saw. Second, I'd like to have you comment on any connection between the structure of intergroup and GSO, if any.
Okay. I would say, unfortunately for general services, intergroups are much better understood than general services. I certainly felt that way when I first reached out to the fellowship. It wasn't to general services. It was through an intergroup. Intergroups are autonomous local entities, and they basically function locally, and their job principally is to make sure that when the drunk who still suffers reaches out for help, that the hand of AA, in fact, is going to be there to reach back. And that's usually, you know, to set up those 12-step lists, to assure those 12-step calls, and to make sure that, you know, usually to publish a meeting list. That is entirely independent of and autonomous from anything that the general service does. I guess one thing that I just want to clarify a little bit, there is a thing called the general service office. We're not from the general service office. We are active in general service through the local area committee, but the general service office is another entity that is the headquarters that people refer to, and that is operated by AA World Services. So the way I look at it is you've got service systems that are functioning in tandem. What's our primary purpose? To stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. We're all pointed in the same direction. We all care about the drunk who still suffers, and we all want to maintain our own recovery. We have that in common, but the two, the general service and the intergroup, are coming at that in very different ways. The most concrete and easy to understand is what the intergroups do. General service gets involved in many other things, and general service in many ways is the public face of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is also the guardian of our traditions and the guardian of our literature. All of the conference-approved literature comes out of the general service channel. But they are very, very separate but cooperating kind of entities. In some areas, they cooperate better than in others. So, anyone else? We still got a... Yeah, right over here. Mike's coming. Happy anniversary, by the way.
Thank you. I'm Wallace, and happy anniversary to you. I don't know if this applies to you or not, but for what it's worth, the biography of Bill Wilson has just been released this week, and it can be found at Barnes & Noble. I'm caught between feelings of whether we should get a percentage of the book, or whether we should endorse the book. I don't know. That's your department. But it is an interesting book.
Okay, thank you. I guess from the general service perspective, we have no opinion on the issuing of Bill Wilson's autobiography. It's interesting, one of the arguments for the history book that we chose not to publish this year, we have another question over here, that we chose not to publish this year was that if we do not tell our story, someone else will, and we should tell our story then rather than have someone else do it. But that didn't actually carry in the discussion. So, but yeah, whoever has the mic.
Yeah, hi, my name is Danny. My home group is the Alcoholics in Action Group in Astoria, Queens. I'm also our GSR. Two things, just one question first of all that I have to ask. Wasn't there some discussion this year at the conference about the membership survey pamphlet?
Yes. There was quite a bit of discussion about the membership survey pamphlet. For those of you who are perhaps not aware, every, I think it's 3 years, Alcoholics Anonymous does a membership survey. We do it, we've been doing it since the, I think we've been doing it since at least the 70s. I'm starting to forget some of my facts now. And we do it periodically. We say we do it because we want to be able to make some statement to the world as to, you know, what we look like as a fellowship, and to also be able to say to ourselves, this is what AA looks like. The membership survey comes out in a pamphlet form. Next survey will be next year, and the next survey pamphlet will probably come out in 2008. And it has information like, you know, what's the gender breakdown, what's the age range, how long have we been sober, how did we find our way to Alcoholics Anonymous, and some other questions which escape me at the moment. This year, the survey looked at whether or not to change the some of the information that was being collected under marital status, and they did make some changes there. I don't recall now, because I don't have those notes with me, and my head is a little like a sieve sometimes. But there was some changes made in the structure of the questionnaire on that question. There was also a suggestion that we add a question about sexual orientation, and that did not carry, so that will not be part of the survey. There was a third item that we talked about. The third item had to do with the breakout of data on length of sobriety. There was a suggestion that maybe we should have more categories to show that, you know, a good number of us are sober a long time, that we're not all, you know, 5 years or under or whatever. They decided that they would defer that question until the actual formatting of the pamphlet in 2008. So the 2008 conference will settle that third question. And then, yes, the final question was, should we do the survey? And, yes, we're going to do the survey. And what will happen is randomly selected groups throughout the U.S. and Canada will be invited to participate in July of next year. and this is supposed to be a statistically viable sampling, and it's supposed to, in fact, give us good data on what we look like as a fellowship. There's also an element in the fellowship who says, why the hell are we wasting time and money doing this? And I think there's some argument out there for that. But that argument did not carry this year, so there will be another membership survey with those couple of changes that I outlined.
Thanks.
Okay.
Just one other thing, too, that I quickly want to talk about, too, is just as an address kind of to the membership, if you will. I just noticed for myself that there's like an increasing sensitivity or oversensitivity to the literature in Alcoholics Anonymous. And sometimes that what happens is any one of us can lose sight of some of the historical significance of some of the literature. The letter to a female alcoholic, to a woman alcoholic, I thought was pretty good. It's based on that Good Housekeeping article, as you know. So it has some historical value, too. Also, for instance, the addendum that's been put into the, I guess, to the forward, to the 12 and 12, that addendum, stuff like that that's really unnecessary in the whole light of things. Any piece of literature in Alcoholics Anonymous is valuable. There's just some pieces of literature that are more valuable than other pieces of literature. I personally don't feel that the membership survey is very valuable. Living Sober is quite valuable. One of the things about Living Sober being published in the 1970s, in a couple of places in Living Sober, it talks about recovered alcoholics. So again, it gives people that idea that this is not just language of the pioneering members in their first flush of spiritual intoxication and over-elation came up with this term recovered, that it's used, that the conference embraces this term. So this is a term, again, that's used in that piece of literature. In A Brief Guide to Alcoholics Anonymous, another pamphlet published in the 70s, it's used in that. But some of that oversensitivity of different things I have to keep in mind for myself. This is for myself, that in the context of things, this was something that was published quite a while ago. It doesn't change the spirit of the publication. It's like, for instance, some of the stories that have been taken out of the book, like Another Chance. The author of that story talks about there were no other Negroes in the meeting with me. People today don't use this language. It's not in people's vernacular today. But it doesn't negate the spirit, again, of that story. It's a fantastic story. So I just wanted to say.
Okay, thank you. I think Jed over here has a question. I would just say, while the microphone is moving, that I have a friend who, as delegate, I hear from a lot of people who are critical of things that are done within the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, and particularly things the conference does or General Service Office. And I guess one of the things that I like about the process is that it gives us this forum where we can come together and hear comments like that or hear a comment that is maybe not so popular. Someone, you know, holds a view that is maybe not so popular. I was an intolerant jerk as a drunk. And, you know, I don't come here to be an intolerant jerk. I've learned to listen and to give people their due. And to try and, you know, be open to the possibility that, as this bill sees it, is not necessarily the way everything should be understood. Jed?
Hi, I'm Jed. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is 9th Avenue in Manhattan. Thanks for doing service. Can you just briefly explain how, when a new edition of the Big Book comes out, the stories are selected, and who writes the foreword? And how long do you think it's going to be before a fifth edition comes out?
Well, the third edition was 1976. The fourth edition was, I believe, 2001. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure this group knows. So, you know, that may give you some sense of, you know, the edition before that was 1952, and the first edition was 51, and the first edition was like 1939. So, you know, that gives you some sense of how that moves. I think, you know, the fourth edition came about because there was a feeling that while the face of A had changed, they wanted to see that reflected in the stories, so that new stories needed to be selected. So that's why they did that. So when we feel that again, we'll probably have a fifth edition of the Big Book. The process really is, it's a committee process, and people sit and they read all the, you know, there's a call put out to the membership. There's one out for, was one out for Spanish stories for the third edition in Spanish. They got like 1,200 stories, I think, for the first fourth edition big book. A call is put out. All these stories come in. Committees and subcommittees are formed to read these, and there's a filtering process that takes place. The final selection is made by the conference literature committee out of what has been filtered down to them, and that's what ends up in the book. The forward to the next edition is usually written by the publications department, but must be a recommended by the conference literature committee and approved by the full conference. Anything that comes out of the conference under the with the name, with the title conference approved literature must be agreed to by two-thirds or better of the full conference in the year that comes forward. Okay, we're kind of at the end of our time. I wanted to let ask Brenda to read something that I particularly like. This is from Dr. Bob's last message, and it kind of pulls it all together for me when we talk of service.
Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to do numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never forget such a degree of smug complacency that we're not willing to extend or attempt to extend to our less fortunate brothers that help which has been so beneficial to us. Thank you very much. That was taken from Dr. Bob in the Good Old Tomas, pages 337 to 38.
Thank you very much.